and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. Joining me once again, Brian Terranova, Casterbus's associate editor. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
And James McLean, podcast meister extraordinaire. Say hello, James.
Hello, James.
Oh yes. I'm taking it. We're all in pretty chipper moods.
Yeah,
so, pretty.
Yep. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about the latest episode of Doctor Who this week, which I believe you will all know by the name of Closing Time, which saw Matt Smith teaming up once again with James Corden for another bit of Doctor and Craig bromancing, as a kind of crazy follow-up to The Lodger last year's Matt Smith and James Corden bromancing. So, let me start with one thing. I'm going to throw it out there straight away. How cool was the name Stormageddon, Dark Lord of All?
That was good. I thought when I first heard it, I was like, oh, he's talking about himself. I thought it was like another oncoming storm reference. And then I was like, no, wait, I just heard that right. It was the baby.
Yeah.
So that was hilarious.
I laughed until it hurt at a particular part of my body.
I noticed that James is silent here.
He is, isn't he? James, are you there?
Well, you spoiled it for me. You sent me a message the week before saying, because you, of course, got to see it before us on a preview.
I didn't spoil it.
You said Stormageddon, so the word was already in my mind.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I didn't spoil the joke for you, surely.
No, but the joke had less, you know, if you had a vivid, perfect colour, and you were shown the vivid, perfect colour beforehand, and then a week later saw the vivid, perfect colour on the wall that it was meant to be presented on, the vivid, perfect colour might be less vivid and perfect to your natural initial responses if you hadn't heard about it the week before. I don't mind. I thought it was a good joke. I thought it was a laugh.
So what are you complaining for?
Well, I just feel
just
that...
Just what he does, isn't it?
I just need to get into the complaining spirit, yeah.
Okay.
So let's leave it with James then. Was there anything about the episode that you didn't like?
I think if this had come after Let's Kill Hitler, I would definitely not have watched the next episode of Doctor Who. I thought this was worse than Let's Kill Hitler.
Right.
It was absolutely the most...
Is that from an action adventure point of view? Or
I think it's worth mentioning. Yeah, there's two different points of view. I mean, I think Let's Kill Hitler structurally wasn't too bad. And I think both of them had some good gags in it. I think both of them had some good acting from Matt Smith. Matt Smith was brilliant in this last one, as he was in The Lodger. I think working in these sort of domestic situations is where he shines and he does a brilliant performance. But yeah, for me, this was just absolute turgid. Terribleness that I could. People I was watching it, I was looking at them and they were looking at me in this like this ghastly, horrified face of what the hell is this?
Who were you watching with?
I was watching my family actually. I was watching and as I tend to do when it comes to Doctor Who, and they just didn't like. I don't know. I think it was just bad on so many levels for me, and I don't particularly like Corden, and I know you've. In the past had a few issues mentioning your own personal not so keen on him as a personality maybe or an actor.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
He was fine in The Lodger and he wasn't bad in this. You couldn't really fault him. It was just the script, the lame modern man, you know, two men who walk into a store, they've got to be, you know, the gag of them being gay, which is, you know, you just say, oh, get over that for God's sake. But it to me, I think the most it was boring for me. I was bored. I didn't believe the characters. I didn't believe that Corden would start running around after him with a baby. I didn't believe the setup. I found the whole thing of him sort of waiting to die, just like a recycling thing of the end of time. And then the Cybermen. Don't get me on the Cybermen. God, I mean, they're just pointless enemies ever now. They're like neutered by the king of Doctor Who has removed their cyber balls. They're just nothing. It's embarrassing. I mean, once, you know, they had a bit of an allergy to gold, which was bad enough. But now, all you've got to do is throw a few emotions their ways and their heads bloody explode. And then that's it. You just run out of the room. They were just absolutely useless. And, the whole thing just seemed an absolute mess. The only thing I will say is good about it is that people I know who liked the sort of Tennant era. I know a few people actually said they liked it because it felt like more of that era. And I think if one of the concerns, which I think we'll have to talk about at some point, about the recent concerns about Doctor Who being too complicated and potentially losing audiences through the complication, episodes like this might address the balance, because I think the people that Doctor Who might be losing are the sort of people who would actually enjoy this episode, where it's a little more light, it's a very easy to digest, you can eat your tea while watching it and not feel you've really missed anything. And I think those sort of people who sort of enjoyed a lot of the Russell T. Davis era might come back to episodes like that. So I think a bit of diversity to the show like that might help it. But for me, I thought it was just the worst of Moffat and the worst of Davis. Sort of the counter, the opposite of last week, which was the best of Moffat with an element of the best of Davis, I would say, thrown in there. But this was like the opposite for me. So yeah, sorry.
Brian, are you still there?
Yeah, I am. I just got back, actually. Is James done?
Yeah, he's done, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Sorry, James. You know, no, I think with Cybermen, I think James is absolutely bang on the money. I mean, we've waited so long to have the kind of our universe version of the Cybermen, and then when we get them, they kind of fall over all the time. And, you know, they have. I love the fact they have snappy heads. I think they're fantastic, the snappy heads. And I liked, because we saw them last year, didn't we, in the Pandorica Opens. And I liked the Cybermats. But one thing I did notice is that the Cyberman ship was underground, and it's underground in one of the Doctor Who the adventure games, the second one of those, which is the Cyberman game. The ship is underground there, and there's a similarity with that. But what do you know? When the Doctor was going down the tunnel into the Cyberman ship, that was a huge missed opportunity, I think, to just. Although I obviously noticed it. I don't know how many other people did, to explicitly remind us of the silence. Because as we saw in The Impossible Astronaut, they were clearly living underground.
It's true.
We could have had the Doctor encounter a silent or two down there and then forget about them.
Yeah.
Just to remind us as to what's happening. Or, you know, just to pull people back to Easter, because it has been a really long season.
Yeah, that probably would have been a good little moment, but I guess... like I had mentioned before, the couple people that I know are a little tired of the running themes, like completely going through everything. I think what was kind of interesting about this is that for the most part, aside from him talking about his impending death and the ending, it seemed like it was a story on its own.
Yeah.
And it could have been finally like another, just a story that, like James was saying, that you can just watch and walk away from and get back to, and you didn't really miss much. And not that those stories are... I think 100% necessary, but it is nice sometimes to just sit down and watch a story for the sake of the story rather than watch a story for the sake of an entire season. I will say, I agree with James on actually a lot of it, and some of it I don't. I agree with the fact that the entire time watching it, all the way up until the end when it became apparent why the baby was there, I didn't believe that, you know, Craig would be running around with his baby in the face of all this danger. I mean, I understand what they made him say was being with the Doctor was the safest spot, but still, it's your baby. I mean, like, even being an uncle, not a father, but even being an uncle, there's no way in hell I would put my nephew in that position, you know? And it didn't seem right to me. It seemed to me like the story probably would have worked better had they not had the baby and maybe put his girlfriend under threat again or something like that. But just it would have been more believable if James was just, or Craig was following the Doctor around. As far as the Cybermen, I agree, they're not really getting used to their fullest potential, but it was like I was saying last podcast that I wanted a story kind of like Terror of the Zygons, and it seemed to me like we got it. There was a ship underground with a crew that were kind of not at their full capacity. I mean, look at the Cybermen, they were all falling apart and tattered and everything. So with James, I keep doing that, with Craig, defeating them by entering his emotions. I mean, they made him the cyber controller. His brain was connected to the computer. He you know, entered a foreign object into there. I kind of believed it.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked if it was just a standard Cyberman they were turning him into, would it?
Exactly.
It had to be cyber controller.
Exactly. And since they were so derelict and so on, it just seemed to make more sense to me. And at the same time, when I first watched it, I kind of felt like James, where I was like, oh, really? But then, you know, like 2 seconds after having that, oh, really? I was like, nah, you know what? I can get this here. So I thought it was a fun episode, all in all. After the last two episodes that we just seen, it seemed kind of a weak follow-up, but it was still a fun episode.
Okay.
The 200 years thing. Did you think about that at all? Because obviously, in the first episode of this season, they point out.
It's never been explicitly stated, has it?
Yeah.
Where the 200 years are from.
No, yeah, because he said he'd been wandering for a time in this episode. And it seems a bit cheeky if they have taken 200 years out of him just for the sake of... I don't know if I like that myself, but...
Well, it's only 200 years, isn't it? I always had a problem with the two previous Doctors having more or less the same age.
Yes, no, I did as well.
Completely contradicts the Seventh Doctor's age.
Yes, that always bugged me as well.
So I don't mind them sticking another 200 years on, because as far as I'm concerned, he's closer to 2000.
Well, I've always imagined that as well. Sorry, Brian.
No, that's fine. I was going to say that what I actually really like and what I want to see them, like Moffat, do this in the new series, because I think it's absolutely brilliant. But in one of the Eighth Doctor radio dramas, he mentions his age and somebody says to him, like, my God, you're really that old or whatever. And his answer is like, well, you know, somewhere around there. I usually just use 900 as a general rule because he forgets his own age traveling in time. It's like, how do you really keep track of it? And I thought it was kind of funny, like he, I think it was something like he thought 900 was a nice middle age, like, you know, I'm 35 instead of 85 or something, you know, it just seemed like a good answer to give out. This way, there's no more of this fans out there going, oh, well, he was 931 in this episode and blah, blah, blah. It's just get rid of it. It's just a number he throws out there. You know,
well,
he's way over. Let's go back to Pertwee. He's like thousands of years old, you know?
But even before Pertwee, I think it's in Baker, between Baker and McCoy, or Davis Baker McCoy, I can't remember without checking my book, the age fluctuates, goes down and up. It's not a consistent thing, even in the classic series. So you can't really get too pedantic on the same thing.
No.
It was never taken too seriously. I think following on to your point about the reason of having the baby, I think that's possibly one of my frustrations with it. And one of the things I always liked when Davis was in control of Doctor Who, though not too keen on what he did in this season of Torchwood, is he seemed very good at taking characters and giving them very sort of realistic reasons for doing what they're doing. Even the Doctor, I mean, people said the Doctor got very emo, but in the end, you know, he was really responding to the scenario that Davis had created for him, where he'd had to destroy his entire race and his enemy and everyone. I didn't feel, and I don't occasionally feel, that the motivations are very honest and they're there to sort of motivate the story. And I think that's what niggles me. I really did not feel, as I said before, that Craig would take his kid. And I didn't get this rationality they tried to have. Well, it's safer with you. That's sort of like saying, well, you're an armed soldier. I'm safer with you, but you are going into the enemy's den. So I'll take
that. That was one. No, I agree with you completely. And that was one, actually, that it's a very good point you brought up, because Craig mentions that, you know, you're the Doctor, you always win, and it's safer near you. And it's like, you met him one time. Did you do research in the meantime?
No,
that,
he nutted
you know,
him.
You're not talking to us about?
Yeah, I remembered that. I thought the same thing when I watched it, but he nutted him, didn't he, in the lodger, which gave him memories of what the Doctor's done.
Oh, right. Okay.
I think we're to assume that he's... But I know what you mean. It did feel like that. It's like, you know, you're suddenly coming out with all these things that you know him and you've met him once.
Yeah. You know what? That would have been a good thing for them to throw in. I mean, ordinarily, as the type of fan that I am, that's something I would have remembered, but the casual viewer might not remember that. Or a new viewer wouldn't even know that. They should have somehow made that apparent, because it did... Well, I guess necessarily it probably isn't that...
I'm also someone who has a big aversion to screaming babies, and to have a screaming baby through it really put me off the story. But, I mean, the positives were there. I mean, I did think there's a lot of lovely little bits in the script, like Christian Stormageddon. There were some nice little touches of comments, and there were some nice reactions. Smith was really good in it. But I mean, the Cyber, I just feel sorry for the Cyber, because I mean, I know Russell T. Davis didn't exactly do anything great with him in The Next Doctor. But, I mean, they always seem to suffer that race. They always seem to go downhill. I mean, now, you know, it almost feels like, you know, if emotions are dangerous to them, maybe they need to just stick to non-emotional creatures and take those over. So, you know, they're probably sitting there planning at the moment, who can we take over next? I know, why don't we try the gold Cybermen of Alpha Centauri? And they'll go, oh, wait, no, we can't go there either, because the gold Cybermen are made of gold as well as... So we're screwed on that front. So, you know, if they're made of a certain metallic metal, or they've got emotions, we better watch out. And we've really got to decide why the bother we're trying to upgrade people into something which, at the moment, is seeming a bit of a downgrade, because
humans don't
explode to emotions or have allergies to gold. Well, most don't.
We've seen the Daleks twice at the height of their powers. We haven't seen the Cybermen like that. I really think that we should.
I think
we always see, I mean, even in the classic series, we'd see them as scavengers or pirates, or, you know, just
Yeah.
Doing invasions.
Very nomadic.
That the Ice Warriors didn't turn up for, you know, so, you know, like the one on the moon. So well,
there's that comment, isn't there? There's a, which again, people argued should never have been made by Tom Baker's in Revenge of the Cybermen, where he sort of knocks them back and says, you know, you're just a load of nomads who were made pretty much impotent by the glitter gun. And at that point, they seem to almost likely, the monsters themselves seem to just lose their mojo. And from then on, they were just useless. Yeah. There's like that comment.
What they either need to do is go to the sort of the style of Cybermen, not the physical style, but the modus operandi of the Cybermen from the Flood in Doctor Who magazine, where they're just ultra powerful and have a massive, great, super high-tech spaceship. And, you know, they should have the Cybermen. They're called Cybermen. They've got cyber. The clue's in the name. They should be, you know, taking over the Earth via the internet and stuff like that. Properly. Not like they did. Not with, like, earpods. I mean, properly. So they should be either doing that, or they should be reverting them back to their partially cybernized cadavers.
Yeah.
Well, that was the other good thing about Moffat so far. Like, the Big Bang showed us, not the Big Bang, but the Pandorica opens showed us that there was actually a skull and a human face inside there. And
totally.
This story, Closing Time, showed us that they were just going to seal Craig's entire body in that suit of armor and then, you know, probably make whatever attachments there. And I like that. And in many ways, it makes me feel that going all the way back to series two with Rise of the Cybermen, that they didn't just remove the brain and stick it in a steel body. It's just the way they talked about it, because it just makes it seem more creepy when there is flesh inside there, when there is flesh that, you know, Borg-like creatures underneath that skin, you know?
There was certain bioorganics, wasn't there, though, in Age of Steel, when he tears off the chest plate. There's
there's all like nerves, isn't it?
Nerve endings. I mean, I must admit, I wish, as you said, Christian, you know, because they've come to our Cybermen now, I don't mind them using the same prop. I can get past that. I think, you know, that's fine. But I do wish that they'd actually made the effort to make them a different sort of Cyberman, because that might have given them a bit of energy, a bit of life, rather than this feeling like a bit like the Ood from the Doctor's Wife. It just felt like they were thrown in there almost arbitrarily. Perhaps almost for the sake of using the Cybermat. And I think the new Cybermen, what was really good about them, which to me made them some of the most scariest monsters in the new series, was the fact of their cyber lines, of having people actually having to stand in line waiting to be cut apart. Yeah. And I thought that was a really horrific. And what was it? It was Doomsday, I think it is, where you know, Torchwood Lady has to actually walk in to be eviscerated and...
Yes.
I thought that was a really creepy psychological moment. And I was kind of, you know, I know it was obviously a downplayed little, this was a little more of a kiddie, easy to watch one. But those sort of elements, when you take them away from the monsters, it does sort of, the monsters sort of lose their power in the story. And I know, in a sense, the story wasn't really about the Cybermen. It was about the Doctor and about Craig. But I think you've always got to be careful when you do that the supporting cast of that, the enemy, the monsters, don't lose their ability to be what they are for the sake of it. And I did really feel the whole love thing. And I felt, I think also because, I didn't like also the fact that it was so easy to convert him. I always feel it starts to dilute it a little. You know, when it's nasty and horrid that conversions are sort of painful and permanent, that's where the fear factor comes in. I mean, even in the next Doctor, while hers wasn't like the rest, there was a certain feel of permanency there that she could never really come back from that. And to have it that, you know, that it just became almost like a child's film. You know, he's almost converted, but he fights against it with his emotions and he's okay at the end. He's the same, no problems. And I don't know. It just felt wrong on a lot of levels. And, you know, to have them defeated by love, I mean, oh God. I mean, is that one of the worst tropes in TV science fiction for Disney and cartoons? Isn't that sort of best suited for She-Ra? I don't know. It just,
Alan Shearer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he needs a little love, I think, these days.
Yeah, probably right. There is something that interesting that they could do with it for a third sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Or a second sequel, I should say. The fact that he was rigged up to the cyber controller... A suit, he could have loads of cyber stuff in his head.
But
nanos in the blood
means,
and so on.
Means he has to come back.
It does mean he has to come back. Yeah, but they could then use that to do something interesting with the Cybermen.
Yeah, that would be a good thing if they did that. I mean, I see what you're saying. They definitely have been majorly downplayed, but I do love a good Cybermen story, and I don't really have a big issue with the Cybermen stories we've seen so far or their appearances. I kind of think it's kind of cool, and in many ways, in some way, it feels to me like they're kind of, you know, shoving them in your face a little bit and saying, remember these guys, because they've got something for them. Maybe they're there for next year. Who knows? I would like to see something creepy and good done with them, but yeah. I can't complain at seeing them. I enjoy them, and I certainly really like the new series design. I would like to see more, like we said, the creepy nature of them being more organic inside, more zombified bodies in there. But I don't know. I liked it. And this story, I enjoyed it more than last year's.
Just on the matter of Cybermen, you know. And, you know, this was a kind of a low-budget episode. I would imagine it was a low-ish budget episode. It was largely set in a department store and a house.
Looked pretty low.
Yeah. And, you know, Cybermen, low-budget episodes, they could easily do a solo Cyberman episode, and they could follow the pattern of the rather excellent Seventh Doctor adventure, Illegal Alien, which came out a few years ago from BBC Books, which has 1997 it came out, which has the Doctor and Ace in World War II with a rogue Cyberman that's been partially bombed, caught in a bomb blast, going around killing people. In order to feed itself.
I thought it was a single one for most of it. I did think we were going to find out at the end there was just one there. And
yeah, I did as well, yeah.
Did you, I mean, I fell for it. There was a bit when they were converting Jane Craig and they cut across to the store. And I did think for a second they were actually going to really surprise me and have actually got rid of Craig and, you know, turn everything against what I was expecting of the episode and actually cyber leader him. And
well, he's a bit chunky, isn't he? So he would be...
He did look like he was having problems with that chest plate.
He'd be the right size for a cyber leader, wouldn't he?
You know what, Jane? I did actually feel the same as you, and I kind of thought,
well,
this...
kind of twice, isn't it, really? There have been two things. There's the same thing with the two Amy's episode, or Rory's Choice, as I call it, where they could have, done something shocking and changed the direction completely, like you say.
And that would have made it be a completely different feel, James. You're right. That would have really made it. It would have actually made it have kept up the storytelling that they just told in the last two stories. You know, the level of
it would have absolutely. It would have meant what you'd seen. It's like Vincent and the Doctor, where I find the Vincent and the Doctor story on the whole is a pity. It's nice, but it's nothing amazing until you get that last 10 minutes where they take him to the gallery. And suddenly everything just falls into place and it just, the whole story feels stronger. And I'd have liked to have seen something quite shocking happen in this one to do the same. But this is happening a lot with Moffat. I've noticed a lot of people, they keep saying things like, I think we've said it actually as well. I don't think that River Song is going to be Amy's daughter. I know everyone's saying it, but it won't be. And then they find out it is, and they go, no, it's going to be a twist. It won't be her daughter. And then we tend to see to find out that it is. And then people say, yeah, because people say, the person who kills the daughter. We've said this again as well. A person who's in the astronaut suit, it's going to be River Song. No, that'd be too obvious. It's too obvious. It won't be that. He's going to trick us. It's going to be something else. And then at the end of this episode, it seems almost quite smug, as if everyone went to work this out. Yes, it's River Song in the astronauts.
Yeah. I was going to come on to this as a kind of a separate...
Sorry.
...separate thing. But no, it's okay, because we can nicely move away from the episode itself and the rather somber ending or departure for the Doctor as he says goodbye to those children.
Yes, that was...
Reminding us that he was here to help. Brought a tear to my eye, I have to say. And then we find River Song reading some notes and interrupted.
Are you the North by Northwest commentary guy?
you don't get that, ladies and gentlemen, check last week's podcast. Madame Kavarian comes in with a couple of silence, straps River Song into a space suit. Now, you know, clearly that's River Song waiting underneath Lake Silencio. I thought that whole segment was nicely put together. The whole, you know, like this, it was like well paced. We had that nice moment at the end of her just floating there. But I mean, it raises a few questions. Why? I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll find out next on Saturday. Maybe we won't. But you know, this whole matter of River Song being in the spacesuit now and us under the impression that it was Melody Pond in the space suit in The Impossible Astronaut. Why? Why was she in the space suit then? I don't understand any of it.
Is next episode extended at all?
Cause, I mean, obviously, no, it's not. It's 45 minutes.
It's just 45 minutes. Mm, I don't know quite how. I have a horrible feeling some of this stuff's not going to get covered.
I think you might be right.
But no, I don't know. Brian, any ideas?
No, honestly, I have no idea. I do have a comment, but no, I have no ideas what the significance is, unless, of course, for some reason, the spacesuit is just some kind of super weapon and they're just trying it again. I mean, it's like I said before, with the Master in the TV movie, trying to steal the Doctor's body because he was running out of lives, and everybody saying, oh, but we've seen that before. And my argument was always, well, if a plan is a good plan, you don't stop doing it just because you failed once. You can succeed, you know? So maybe they just feel it's an ultimate weapon and they know it will work to kill the Doctor, so they have to use it again. But my comment is actually going to be, you were talking about how we all kind of said, you know, oh, River is Amy's daughter, and River is the one that kills the Doctor. Oh, but that's too easy. Moffat says the same thing in Confidential. He goes, oh, and then, of course, we learn the secret that River is the one in the suit who kills the Doctor. And he's like, I mean, you probably already knew that, you know, and he conceded. He knew that everybody already kind of knew that. And the whole misdirection was just trying to make people doubt that they already knew that, rather than actually trying to give them something different.
Okay, well, that's that's almost sort of like saying, here's a dinner. I'm making a dinner for you. I know, because if you know me, I tend to make beans on toast. But, you know, this week, because it's a special day, a special ending, I'm going to make something great. And then end up just giving them beans on toast and saying, yeah, well, you know, it's just a bit of misdirection, really. Yeah. You thought it was going to be something really interesting. I kept saying it was beans on toast. You kept thinking, can't be beans on toast for this special day. It's got to be something more interesting. And in the end, it's beans on toast with my waiter, my butler, Christian, coming in and just sprinkling a little bit of pepper on top before passing it to you. It is a bit of a cop-out. I mean, anyone could misdirect and then give what everyone's expecting.
Oh. I'm totally not arguing that, but my point is that he's aware of what you said.
Yeah. That's a fair point. I didn't know that.
Perhaps, ooh, fingers crossed, or, you know, maybe there is more to it. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, I've been thinking that a lot of this might get undone. It might be the whole River Song thing gets completely undone.
That would be good.
Yeah, I thought you might say that.
A lot of people would probably like that. However, I can imagine a lot of people would be upset because when they rewatch the episodes, she'll still be in them. So if we get that, it's not really going to be that satisfying, is it? You know.
But do we have to take for granted now, on a sort of fanish level, that time is being rewritten? Because something I did notice in this episode, that, you know, when there was the mention of the Cybermen. There was one that Craig made no reference to a fact of there being any sort of doomsday-like occurrence with Daleks over London or anything. And certainly didn't obviously mention Cybermen being over London as well. So are we to assume that stuff has been rewritten, that time is changing regardless? You know, I'm not saying this is a reason why we should get rid of River Song, but I'm just saying generally speaking.
Well, I think after, well, over a year, getting on for 24 episodes, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I think by the end of this series, we do need to know why Amy doesn't know what Daleks are, or didn't
certainly
know what Daleks are.
Certainly before she's not in the show anymore.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, absolutely. And again, as we said last week, or I might have edited it out, I can't remember. I think I edited it out. The issue that of Amy and Torchwood. This is the series of Doctor Who and Torchwood actually meant to be in the same year, and neither allying themselves with circumstances.
Obviously, BBC Wales producing, and BBC Worldwide, BBC Wales and Starz producing Torchwood, but BBC Wales are involved, so it should be closer, shouldn't it?
You think so, and if it's not, it'd be nice within the show for a reason.
Which brings up a question that I have for both of you. Next week's episode of Doctor Who, what are you hoping for the outcome of the Doctor? Like, what, not how do you think it's going to be resolved or anything like that, but what are you actually hoping for the resolution?
Satisfaction.
Fair answer. It's a fair enough answer, James.
I think I'm not looking for anything particular. I know I sort of go on about River Song. I'm not looking to see her being wiped from the timelines. I'm not looking for. I'd like to get rid of. I'm hoping that the Doctor's wife thing ends up being a fallacy, because I've never felt comfortable with that. Not the idea of him not loving other people. I just never felt there was anything. The chemistry just always felt awkward with the two of them. I'd like to see that retro changed, or to be an alternative timeline, maybe. Get rid of that. Apart from that, I'd obviously like to have him get past this whole dying thing, which we know is not going to happen. And I would like Riversong to finish here. And again, as I don't mind her coming back as a character, you know, a one-off occasionally. I've got no objections to that. I know she's very popular with a lot of fans, but I want to get rid of this laggy storyline.
Yeah.
Finish it and then move right on. And if she wants to come back like Captain Jack, fine. But no more of this. Who is Riversong, sweetie? Hello, sweetie. Just get out of the way. Get over it. We have 2 years ago. I have.
I would like to see similar. I'd like.
I thought you were going to say, get your bus pass. Roll it into that. Sorry, Brian, carry on.
No, quite all right. I'd like to see next series the same kind of like James, like take a break from River, but I wouldn't mind if the one after that she came back for a story, kind of like how they use Jack in a similar fashion. I'd like to see Jack come back for a story like that. But for the whole resolution to the Doctor's death, what I'm looking for this season is not another time being rewritten kind of ending and rewriting the death of everything. I'd like to see something more interesting. I'd like to see that either this is or isn't really the Doctor in some way, but in somehow, however it is or isn't, it's not time being rewritten and undoing everything that we just sat here and watched be the resolution, which, being Stephen Moffat and knowing how much he likes time-bending type of stories, I'm not expecting much, because I know that that's probably going to be the case. But I think it would be much more interesting if the Doctor came up with some kind of plan to save himself from his own death and still make the timeline appear as though he had died in order to save the timeline, save the time.
Can I throw a couple of suggestions out there?
Go for it.
Okay. First of all...
No, it's a bad one.
The obvious one, which is a ganger Doctor.
Yeah.
Right.
But of course, we do see that the Doctor gets burnt to a crisp at the end of... beginning of The Impossible Astronaut.
There's nothing saying a ganger Doctor can't die that way. I mean,
No, there isn't. But we have seen them in various horrific states of melting, haven't we? So
true, but we also know that those two characters at the end of the story are supposedly now human.
Yes.
So theoretically, they're not going to die by turning into blobby flesh.
Yeah, true. My other suggestion is the Tesselector, because we don't know what happened to that, do we?
The Tesselector.
Oh, yeah, God, Brian, come on, the Tesselector.
From Kill Hitler.
Oh, right, that.
Oh, that thing. Oh, my God. I forgot the name of that thing. Really? Yeah. You think, I don't know.
It's possible. Because you could burn that. Presumably you could burn that, and then the Doctor could still pop out of its head.
and it could replicate the regeneration effect. Yeah, I can see that happening. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'd be very interested. I mean, I know I just talked about, you know, the romantic side of it, but I mean, something that Moffat's been really pushing this season is how awkward and how unromantic this Doctor is. So I'm wondering again whether maybe we will see the end of this storyline as well, because while it was probably something quite fun to project as an idea for the 10th Doctor, I'm wondering whether we are going to find that there is no wife thing with the Doctor, not in the way that fans are hoping. Because,
yeah.
I mean, like today, again, they were sort of, this week again, they were sort of pushing that whole thing that he's just not very good. Sort of very bubbled, isn't he? Obviously, because he's an alien, but he sort of has almost that sort of Rain Man sort of feel to him, is what I'm trying to point at. And I can't see him sort of naturally sitting down and marrying someone like her. So maybe that will be the surprise for the audience. And there's going to be something we don't understand, and that's sort of the history of them that should be revealed in this.
Perhaps she will marry a duplicate.
Well, that's what I wonder, whether she does have a relationship with a Doctor, but it's not going to be this Doctor, a bit like Rose and false Doctor, half-human Doctor. I don't know. But
It might even be that Doctor.
That's an interesting idea, isn't it? Or if it was this, you know, if somehow that other Doctor, he gets around, if he does, had a bit of Rose, now he's going for a bit of a bit of Song.
Yeah. Going for a song.
Hey. Did you think that in this episode, actually, I was talking to my friend about this, that billboard of Amy Pond, Amy Song, she wasn't the best picture of her, I didn't think.
No, there's far better pictures of her.
I thought as a
I've
model.
I've got a lot of them on my computer.
attached
taken to, from telephoto lens, right?
Hey. Or pasted onto mismatched pornography.
No, you don't need to do that.
A lot of people do.
I understood it. You don't need to do that.
No.
If you've ever seen a naked woman, you don't need to do that.
But people do.
Yes,
I work with graphic manipulation. No one's asked me to do it. You know, if they gave me money, maybe I would consider it. I think I'll edit that out.
That'll be possible.
But no, it's a crazy, the crazy world of the internet is...
James McLean does it for money.
He would. He'd do most for money.
Right, okay, so...
Even River Song.
We've got to the end of this episode. So, and we've already started speculating about next week.
Did someone say there was a Dalek in the preview? I didn't spot that.
Yes, there's a Dalek in the trailer, yeah.
Right. Which, it was all destroyed. Awesome. Hopefully that means those crappy candy-coated Daleks will not be coming back ever again.
Say what you really mean, Brian.
Okay. Those Daleks are crap.
Well, I'm getting excited about next week's episode because I'm starting to think there's a lot of exciting things. It could be a really compressed, fast-moving, exciting roller coaster.
Yeah.
Or it could be a confusing mash of rubbish, but I'm hoping on the former.
Well, what I want to do is just briefly, and I know we did this weeks and weeks and weeks ago, yeah. But we've got two more listeners now, so we've got two listeners.
Awesome.
Hi, mm-hmm. listeners. So there's a few aspects about the trailer which keep getting my goat. And they're mainly the fact that Winston Churchill, pterodactyls, Silurians, and Romans all appear to be coexisting in London.
Uh-huh. So you're thinking someone's been reading the K. One of our two listeners.
One of our two listeners may have seen Casterbrus or even the first Vault of Warp magazine, which had the following elements in the Time Leech comic strip. Winston Churchill, pteranodons, Silurians, and a Roman setting in London. Now, I'm not saying that anyone has been reading this stellar piece of independent Doctor Who comicry. But, you know, I just got, ooh! So, yeah, that's the end of that, really. Just if anyone wants to see some more Silurians with pterodactyls and Winston Churchill, then you can find the Time Leech comic strip on the Casterbrus website.
Who's writing next week? Is it Moffat?
Yes.
Just so we can be clear who's going to start sending you legal.
I think you'll find I wrote
cease and desist
before this was written.
And he'll...
I think you need to tweet him about this and see what his response is.
Yeah, perhaps I should.
You should tweet him the comic strip and just say, seen this? Huh?
And being the man of infinite humor, jest, and high threshold for frustration, I'm sure he'll reply very politely and apologize.
He'll mail you £5 and be done with it.
Yeah, £5 is Scottish.
What the heck do they have there?
No, they're tight.
Scots. You don't know that, do you? No, that's
I don't know that.
It's a general gag.
Notoriously. Stereotypically protective of their money.
Yeah.
I'll edit that out in case one of the two listeners is Scottish. We go down to one. Or if both are Scottish, then we're screwed.
Yeah, I've seen Day of the Dalek special edition now. And as we were saying just before the podcast, I really enjoyed the special edition disc. I watched it in one sitting, as is always the way, unless you're feeling really nostalgic and you watch it every Saturday. And totally enjoyed it. I mean, you can see some of the new bits are quite blatant, other bits aren't so. The CGI, I think Brian said last week, the CGI landscape of the city, when you first see it, I think it's a bit clunky, but the second time you see it, I think it's much better. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I felt the same.
Yeah, and I love the iconography of the big signs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm not going to spoil that for anyone. It's really good. Because you know you've got a Dalek run totalitarian world. So no, it's really they've worked wonders with it by essentially keeping all of the original elements and just tarting it up slightly. I think is probably the best word, but it's done in a more Empire Strikes Back way than a Star Wars. Indeed, yes. Let's not get into that. Does anyone have anything to add to this week's podcast?
But it's interesting because, I mean, depending on next week, we've got a Torchwood scenario for me. Next week's could make this season really feel like a really quite a lot better than I've thought it had been previously. Yeah. Or it could make it feel naff because, I mean, there's been some good stories in it. I mean, Impossible Astronaut, Day of the Moon, a couple of funny bits in there, but they were good, solid stuff. The C1 was all right, the Fatal Pearl or whatever, that was okay. Doctor's Wife, there's some nice fun elements in there, some good storytelling. The Gangers thing, there was nothing really bad about that. I didn't like the end of the season finale, mid-season finale, and I hated the Doctor that kill Hitler. But then we had two, Night Terrors was okay, but they had two very good episodes. So we've had a good mix.
Yes.
All you need is one good end episode, and I think you can say this has been a pretty solid season by and large. Not as, for me personally, I preferred season four, Tennant season four personally, but I think this stands up as good Doctor Who that people can actually say, yeah, that's a good program.
I'm with you that I think I may have preferred season four as well. I just think it just came together really well. It all worked as a whole to me. But it's funny, you mentioned all those episodes as you went through, and I know I had mentioned before my feelings on this, but it's amazing how I forgot about the pirate episode until you just mentioned it. I mean, that's how memorable that one was to me. I just felt that was like one of the slowest watches of Doctor Who that I've seen since the show came back on air. And it's not even a horrible episode, you know?
Yes, exactly.
It's not a bad episode. It's not very memorable.
No issue. No, I mean, I think next season Moffat's got to start changing his game plan. That's my final.
Apparently, there's no arc next year. Apparently.
Well, more than that, because I mean, this year, and I know we've said it before, but there's been no real mastermind. I know we've got one big mastermind who's barely in it, but generally speaking, you've got no arch enemies being used. As Brian said last week, you really don't have many invasions. It does tend to be sort of hollow ships with hollow ships, hollow doctors, or things that have malfunctioned, or things of nature. There's sort of similar tropes which are going through it. Yes,
there's no real evil,
which
is
good.
I mean, like, it is good. It is interesting for good stories, but it's not exactly true to life, because even here on Earth, there are people who are just evil and they do bad things because they are bad people, you know, not just because they had an unfortunate life or something weird happened to them. And it's just more real to have a proper mix. I'm not saying that those accidental things.
It does have to be a mix. You can't have a big villain every week. You can't have a Morbius one week and then the Master the next week and then Davros the week after or whatever. You have to have that.
And that's
what they need to be doing straight away. If they haven't done it already, they need to be doing that now. They need to be doing a Davros story. There's only one thing to say other than goodbye from myself, James, and Brian, and that is don't forget to watch Doctor Who on Saturday or as soon to broadcast as you can. So from us, it's goodbye and we'll see you next time. Brian?
Yes?
Yeah, there's no such thing as an unknown number. All numbers are known.
I don't know. Have you ever heard of Queen?
Queen?
The number Queen with an M on the end. It's very rare. It's very rare. It's only really used when you're like a gazillionaire, I think.
Oh, right. Okay. No. Well, no, I hadn't heard of that one. No.
Yeah, you see, it was an unknown number to you then, wasn't it?
Well, no, the number is not unknown. The terminology is unknown.
You stay out of this. And I want you to know right now, I'm actually pointing at your picture on the screen as if we were face-to-face right here, okay?
Bless.
So you know I'm pointing. I mean business.
Hey, I do that as well. Well, I don't point. I just look.